Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.
Thank you for coming back to the Quick Restart podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Quint Kesnick. Quint, we lost an hour of sleep last night, but fortunately the lacrosse action made up for it once again. We didn't have the OT games that we had last week, but we've got upsets to discuss that have changed the landscape of college lacrosse. It was a long weekend, Thursday all the way through Sunday, the action just winding down as we begin to record. How do you put this weekend into context?
Well, we lost an hour. We also lost a number one team in Towson, and only one unbeaten remains. The ACC, solid weekend. They went 5-0, and we're starting to sort things out. You know, some teams with momentum, others kind of have to regroup before league and conference play.
So let's go back to Thursday. You were on hand at Koskinen Stadium. The Duke Blue Devils jumped out to a significant lead and held throughout. Loyola managed a couple of late goals to salvage a complimentary scoreline, but it was a 12-7 finish. And for me, the big takeaway was welcome to 2019, Nekhi Montgomery.
Well, I thought Cade Van Raphorst was the man of the match in the work he did against Pat Spencer. You know, Pat didn't look like his typical self for whatever reason, and Duke did a great job on Kevin Lindley face guarding him. And Loyola's offense didn't really have answers to that strategy. But Nekhi Montgomery hit his mid-range shots, loved his release, his change of levels. And Duke's offense is starting to look like a Duke offense, you know, where the guys are in the right places, the spacing's good. Strong dodges with the ball, drawing double teams, getting that ball reversal. They have two very competent midfields. There's really no drop-off between Group 1 and Group 2. Joey Manown is scrapping down low, and Brad Smith's a man. So I got Duke at number one in my poll at the end of this week.
So I don't want to spend any more time on this game than it is necessary, but you mentioned Loyola's struggles offensively. There was some personnel shakeups with Peter Swindell moving to the short stick D midi, the return of Higgins, who had been out with an injury, and yet it didn't feel like it necessarily manifested itself in a positive game at either end of the field. So you have accurately pointed out Loyola's shortcomings, and even in this game, it felt like a lot of times they were playing defense by save. I think Jacob Stover finished with 14 or 15 stops. I guess my question for you is, I've asked this like 2 or 3 weeks ago, how good is Loyola? And now it feels like I'm asking it at the other end of the spectrum. How bad is Loyola?
Well, I got them back down at number 9 right now. You know, their wins kind of lost a little luster this week. I thought Chase Scanlon was amazing. Their Fogo Bailey, Savio, nice game. Ryan McNulty played well as well. And Stover stood tall. He was under attack the whole game. The overall performance of their shorties is a major concern. They got dusted on ground ball play. They were sloppy clearing. They're getting no bench scoring. And their midfielders, other than Scanlon, can't seem to draw slides. So they got a lot of work to do. The good news is they start the Patriot League this week against Navy.
Moving on, it was a weekend of 2 games in 3 days. There were two neutral site events, for lack of a better word. One in Philadelphia featuring 4 Philadelphia-based teams, St. Joe's, Drexel, Villanova, and Penn. Penn, the winner of that overall, coming away with 2 victories, including a 13-11 win over Villanova. The Wildcats dropping a surprising result to Drexel 15-10 on Sunday as well. But you were in Charlotte. You weren't at this event. It was a very high-profile event, the Crown Lacrosse Classic, and it featured one of the games of the weekend as the Penn State Nittany Lions emerged 19-13 victors over the Cornell Big Red. This was a hotly anticipated game. Cornell came in to this game number 2. Penn State has been near the top of the Inside Lacrosse media poll all season long. For this one, you know, Grant Immense really, to me, you know, continues to put himself in that player of the year kind of leader category.
You know, yeah, I agree with you. He's torching teams right now. I got Jared Bernhardt, Pat Spencer, Grant, and Michael Sowers as 4 attackmen who are playing at I don't want to say historical levels, but they are dominating games and putting up gigantic totals. Ament is a wizard, okay? We know his change of direction, but his ability to dissect the defense in mid-dodge and distribute skip passes, unbelievable in that win against Cornell. He did it again on Sunday after a kind of a slow start against Jacksonville. Next thing you know, the score is ridiculous. So, you know, hashtag we are. Here they go. I think Penn State has a bye this week. You got to check that out. I couldn't come up with a game that they play, but their offense is on fire. I thought Cornell coming back on Sunday with that win over Towson was gigantic. You know, you give up 19, you lose to Penn State on Friday, but that's a great turnaround. And now Jeff Teat and the Big Red play Yale Saturday. That's an ESPNU game at noon from New Haven, and it's you know, kind of like a 1-2 matchup in the Ivy League. A great game.
So you mentioned, obviously, it was, like I said, a two-game and three-day scenario. Penn State turns around and beat Jacksonville 24-11 on Sunday. But we talked to Coach Jeff Tamburoni after their win over Cornell on Friday. So let's go ahead and hear what Coach Tambo had to say.
First of all, Gerard, not ideal conditions. But, you know, I think the big thing probably for you guys is keeping the ball out of that offensive stick. You know, just talk about that for me.
I would definitely agree. We got a great deal of respect for Cornell. And felt like we got off to a great start, a lot of possessions, but never really felt comfortable, even with the lead that we had in that first quarter. And that's, you know, a reflection about how we feel about those guys. They're good at both ends, but just so efficient in their offensive end. So, you know, Gerard helped out a lot. But one of the things that we just didn't do a great job with when we played those guys last year is clearing the ball, picking the ball up off the ground. They struggled a little bit off the clear today, and they're just very good second chances. So I know I thought we did enough today to get over the hump, and you know, that's a really good team. So felt good about the effort that our guys gave today.
Yeah, and Grant, just 9 assists. The word maestro comes to mind. Can you just put into words what he does for your offense?
He's been a great leader. He keeps everyone kind of on a straight path. It's not just what he does in the production on the stat sheet, but he's constantly having conversations with our coaches, with the guys as they're going on and off the field, and has a superior IQ as well, just an elite IQ about what's going on and about what we should be doing out in the field. So he really is a coach on the field, and we utilize him as such. So probably immeasurable outside the stat sheet. I think what you see on the stat sheet certainly is nice, but what he provides in terms of leadership and IQ and poise, everybody just, he makes everyone else around him better. I guess that's probably the best way to put a description of Grant. So, I mean, we take a huge step in the right direction because of his efforts.
And final question is just like the flow of the game. It kind of felt like at points that they would come back, but then you guys would get like one or two really big goals to kind of just stem that momentum. How did you see that unfold?
Yeah, I think that's probably a great way to describe it. I was really proud of the way we did respond, because it did feel like the momentum after that first quarter was shifting towards Cornell. They were doing a real good job of just grinding out possessions at the faceoff X, off the ground, in the ride. You know, Mac O'Keefe, Nicky Spillane in particular, yeah. I thought those guys, Dylan Foles, I thought those guys played with a lot of poise down the stretch. So, you know, we knew it was going to be a tough game tonight. One of the things that we talked about, one of our keys, was just not to blink. I thought last year we had a 3-goal lead on them going into the fourth quarter, and they did a great job. We didn't play with any discipline, gave a number of balls back. Today, I think we finished the game strong. We just didn't blink towards the last probably eight or 9 minutes, or even played with more poise down the stretch than we did in the second, third quarter. So I was proud, especially some of those leaders, those junior and senior leaders, in terms of the way they played when it seemed like it was starting to slip away. I felt like they still had enough courage to make plays, and they did.
All right, and Quint, as you mentioned, the Big Red responded in a significant way, beating Towson 18-11 on Sunday. It was a dominant performance, kind of end-to-end type of showing. And really, you know, talking with Coach Peter Milliman after the game, and you'll hear from him momentarily, it was a daunting matchup because Cornell had been one of the worst teams facing off in the country, going against a Towson Tigers team who had ridden Alex Woodall's performance all the way to a number one ranking. And clearly, that did not turn out to be the factor in determining the outcome of this game.
No, that's a huge win by Cornell, and really at a point where I was starting to wonder what's wrong with this team. You know, they only lost one defender, Pulver. They lost their goalie from last year, and I had high expectations. And it finally showed up on Sunday. They bounced back on one day's rest and take down a Towson team. Maybe, you know, struggling to deal with the pressure of being the number one team in the nation. You had a bunch of their players selected in the prior night's Major League Lacrosse draft. Alex Woodall, Zach Goodrich, Brendan Sunday. A lot of pats on the back. So, you know, maybe Towson was ripe, but I give Cornell a lot of credit. And as I said, it sets up a great matchup on Saturday at Yale.
Well, let's go ahead and hear from Big Red coach Peter Milliman.
Talk about the possession game in this one, because, you know, Woodall, number three, is great, but it felt like you guys had so many possessions off the ride and just gutsy ground balls and stuff like
that. Well, I think the point of focus has been to find a way to even out our possession problem, because we really haven't had even close to as many possessions as our opponent the last few games. And we know we have a pretty good offense if we get it to them. And we just need to find a way to get the ball down there. And we were struggling to do it on the draw, so we just figured whatever we could do to build enough possession throughout the game, we had to put in a little bit more aggressive ride, had to change up our face-off plan, and really just convince guys that if you sell off our ground balls for us, then we have a chance of getting the ball to our offense and scoring goals. And, you know, we toughened up a little bit better on defense, which we needed to, gave up too many transitions and things we didn't need to. We lived on man down, but... you know, we got the ball on offense as much as we've had in a long time, so that helped us.
And then Clark, just he had the hot hand early. What did you think about his performance?
He's our guy. He's the leader. He's the beating heart. He is on the field doing everything he can for our team. And you know, I didn't even notice half of them because he finds a way to make them kind of subtle. But he's all around the net. His nose is on it. He finds the ball and he's, you know, buried him.
And final question is, how did you guys approach this weekend, particularly yesterday? Did you guys practice? Did you take it easy? Film study, anything like that?
Yeah. Well, the way we go into the weekend is we don't prepare for Sunday's game until we're done with Friday, because we don't want to get our guys thinking about too many different things. So yesterday was an abbreviated version of what you would do to prep for a game. You know, we had a short practice where we went through some stuff. We watched film and wrote a scout, but... yeah, there's not much. I mean, most of it for us is going to be the mental prep and getting ourselves prepared for one game at a time, but having to refill the tank mentally for Sunday's game, because that's the hardest thing.
All right, Quint, you mentioned it. I want to flash back to Saturday. The 2019 Major League Lacrosse Draft took place at the NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte, North Carolina. Alex Woodall was taken number one overall by the Ohio Machine. It was a surprising choice for a lot of folks. The presumptive number one pick, Pat Spencer, who has outwardly stated, but still some uncertainty exactly around whether or not he's going to spend a fifth year of eligibility playing NCAA basketball next season, dropped to the Chesapeake Bayhawks. The Bayhounds would be an interesting but also kind of cool name. Chesapeake Bayhawks at number seven overall. You were on hand for LAC Sports Network to call the draft after an arduous trip to get there. Tell us about what your thoughts were on how the draft unfolded.
Well, I'm glad I got there, and I made it just in time. I left my house at 5 a.m. I didn't pull into Charlotte till 7:15, but I was there for the first selection, and we did a two-hour show. Wonderful venue, great venue, excellent vibe and energy in the building with a lot of youth athletes, some pro players. And then just to talk to the coaches, GMs, presidents, and owners of these Major League Lacrosse franchises. You know, these are a lot of guys who have been watching a ton of college lacrosse. And they've watched a lot of games mid and lower tier that I don't typically get to watch. And so it was fascinating to talk to a Tony Seaman, a Dave Cottle, a Spencer Ford, a Bear Davis. I learned so much. So that was great. The draft in itself, obviously with PLL and MLL now doing battle head-to-head, was a tricky dance, because you don't want to reach out and get an athlete and then lose him to the other league. That's why a guy like Brad Smith was overlooked. You know, you had a bunch of Duke guys and a bunch of Johns Hopkins guys whose head coaches happened to be on the advisory committee of PLL not get selected. And that's a fact. And, you know that's an issue going forward. I think Alex Woodall going number one was more a case of this being a weak Fogo group, Austin Henningsen being number two Fogo. After that, there's a dearth of Fogos, and so he was a commodity. Look for Woodall to be traded ultimately to the Chesapeake Bayhawks to end up playing in his hometown. But how cool was it that Timmy Trautner, his high school teammate out of St. Mary's, got picked number two overall? So I was pretty impressed. The drafting has gotten so much better in the last decade. You know, I think I've done every draft, maybe minus one or two. And these guys are sharp. They're using analytics. They're using tape. They're making road trips. They're talking to coaches. They're really doing their work, and it shows.
Was there one guy that went later in the draft than you anticipated on the basis of what you have seen from him? And you were kind of like, oh, wow, I can't believe this guy slipped as much as he did. I wonder what's going on, what the dynamic is, you know, maybe what these coaches are hearing that I haven't.
Well, there's a handful of guys. As I mentioned, Brad Smith would be one. Cade Van Raphorst would be another. The Denver athletes went a little lower than I expected. And some of the Notre Dame players went a little lower than I expected. You know, and I think there's some dynamics off the field in terms of careers or league choice looming over their picks.
Understood. And on the other hand, guys who I really liked that I was surprised. I'm like, I wonder, you know, why he fell as far as he did. Lucas Wittenberg is one that stands out to me. I've been a fan of him since high school. And to be taken, I believe, number 48 by the Dallas Rattlers, to have such a strong connection to the folks that have been involved in the Atlanta Blaze, that was a head-scratcher for me because he is a tall, alley-dodging midfielder who can attack a pole. You know, for me, he struck out as the type of guy who I just has perpetually overperformed at the Major League Lacrosse level.
This is a strong class. You know, it's light on attackmen. You know, Spencer stands out amongst the group. Then you got guys like Sunday and Brendan Gleason and Kyle Maher and Austin French, John Wagner. The midfielders are deep. The defense is really deep. As I said, light in the Fogo department. The LSMs are not great. And then it's got a bunch of goalies. I had six goalies I thought would get drafted, and six guys I think are good enough to play professional lacrosse. So you get to pick 30, and there was still a lot of quality on the board. It'll be fascinating to see how this shakes out with the PLL draft coming up, and then players have decisions to make based on where they want to live, how they want to approach their career, maybe how they want to approach their first summer after college. You know, many of them perhaps will be starting work in September. So there's a lot of moving parts still. But I'm so glad I went down there. I got to do the NASCAR simulator and drive in, you know, in a NASCAR super speed car and crashed into the wall like 16 times. But it was pretty fun.
So back to lacrosse, into the Carrier Dome, a place known for speed. The Syracuse Orange emerge 14-10 victors over the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays, according to our friend Lax Reference. At one point, starting the fourth quarter, they had just a 25% win expectancy as the Blue Jays had established a lead. This is a rivalry with which you're well familiar and one that can be very meaningful in the way that it forecasts how these teams' seasons unfold. It was also two teams coming off of opposite directions, Johns Hopkins having won in Princeton by two, and Syracuse coming off of an overtime loss against Virginia. What does it mean that the Orange was able to pull away down the stretch of this one?
Well, a week ago against Virginia, they couldn't finish. They didn't finish. They probably deserved to win that game until about the last 5 minutes and gave it away. This week, they didn't. This week, they rallied six fourth-quarter goals. Jacob Buttermore, Peter Dirth, Brett Kennedy, really strong. The defense kind of played well after the first quarter, and it sets up now, you know, a little run. They have one more non-conference game at home on this this epic homestand. They play Rutgers, which is a giant game. And now Hopkins, if you do the math, Terry, I couldn't bump them out of my top 20, but they need wins prior to the Big Ten because they're not going to get to 500 without beating Delaware Saturday, without beating Mount St. Mary's Tuesday night 7. It's on an ESPN network. I'm broadcasting the game. I'm just not sure which one. Those are must wins. If Mount plays to Hunter on Tuesday and shocks the world by beating Hopkins, the Blue Jays are in deep, deep water because they'll be 2-4 with a lot of difficult games in a stacked Big Ten this year. So you've got to be 500 or better to be eligible for the NCAA tournament. Do the math. Hopkins has to beat Mount St. Mary's and Delaware this week.
It's a big one for the Blue Jays. But moving along, another significant outcome. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who fell to 1-1 with a win over Detroit Mercy and a loss to Richmond, has now put together a pair of impressive showings. First, they beat Maryland, yes, in Loftus, which we know is significant in the outcome of games, but a win is a win. And then they headed to Southern California for the Pacific Coast Shootout, and in front of more than 7,000 fans, dispatched the Denver Pioneers 10-7 after building an 8-2 second quarter lead. Brian Costabile set the pace with 3 goals and an assist. But I thought for me, this one, it was a really eye-opening kind of... Notre Dame got to 50% of the face-off X against Denver, which has not been the case for the last several years. And I think Charlie Leonard is the name of the face-off specialist. I was really impressed by his ability to battle, and particularly battle back, because I believe Denver won every face-off in the third quarter, and that was when they cut the lead to 8-6. Notre Dame was able to kind of grind things from there and ended up holding on to the 10-7 victory.
Notre Dame's defense is good as advertised. Krantz, Keelty, and Cohen. I like the vibe of this team, though. You know, they seem faster, maybe a little younger, deeper, a little more aggressive. Not sure if it's that's because of the shot clock. But, you know, holding on after up 8-3 at half, I don't have any problems with that. Nowadays, you hold a team to single digits, you're likely to win. The questions that emerge from this game, in my eyes, are Denver's offense. You know, Ethan Walker, Colton Jackson, and then a mix of young talent, but it's just not looking great. You know, they didn't score against Duke. They didn't score against Notre Dame. Yeah, I know those are two great defensive franchises, but if you're going to win a national title or play a Final Four quality game, you got to get to 10-plus goals to do that. And right now they can't. And plus the injury to Dylan Johnson, who I have so much respect for the way that young man has played the sport. You know, a shout out to Dylan. Hope he gets back. To whether it's this year, next year, down the road, playing professional. That hurts, and Denver clearly has work to do. And, you know, they have winnable games coming up against quality opponents, so they can put themselves back to where they'd be a top eight seed. But right now I got them at 12. I find it impossible to have them any higher.
Yeah, it was clear. I joined this game in the middle of Notre Dame building that 8-2 lead, and talking with some of the other folks on the Inside Lacrosse staff, it really seemed like Denver's defensive sloppiness had as much to do with it as Notre Dame's offensive competency. And certainly when you get the news that Dylan Johnson is done for the season after an injury at midweek in practice, a lower body injury, it's going to be tough to recover. And I was impressed to a degree by the way in which they showed some of that recovery in the second half, only allowing the Irish to score 2 goals. For me, one of the other subtexts or storylines from this one, 17 penalties assessed in this game. I believe 5 extra man goals scored of the 17. There's 2 factors at play. Number one, out of hotbed officiating. That's a conversation that's been had time and time again for the last 20 years. I'm not that interested in relitigating it. I am interested in it. Seems like it's been a theme every week on this podcast. Quint, you and I have talked about how the implementation of the shot clock has manifested itself in different elements of the game. We've talked about it relative to save percentages. We've talked about it relative to fatigue. I think there's an interesting question about it seems like there's a lot more penalties than there have been in prior years, and certainly the dive being a penalized play is going to be a part of that as well. Do you share that sentiment? Does it feel like there are more penalties being called than there have been in years past?
There's more of everything because it's a better game. There's more possessions. There's more shots. There's more saves. There's more ground balls. There's more penalties. There's more of everything. We're playing the full 60 minutes now, folks. Okay, we don't have that 2.5 minutes where Team X throws the ball around forever, okay? There's a lot less dead time in this game. And that's why we're looking at our best season ever. I mean, this is a full 60 minutes of lacrosse, and more stuff's going on, and it's a better product.
Let's quickly rip around to some other results that caught our attention. Start with the Ohio State Buckeyes, 14-8 over the Hofstra Pride. Ohio State is, as you said, the lone undefeated team remaining in college lacrosse.
Yeah, what do you do with them? You know, wins over Cleveland State, BU, UMass, which is a good win. I like UMass. And BU is a pretty good win as well. Bucknell, Marquette, and Hofstra. Now, Marquette's struggling this year. They lost to Cleveland State, your squad, and the you know, a Hofstra game. Okay, Trey LeClair, we know what he can do. Jack Myers, 6'4", 200-pound freshman, strong. Nice shooting in this game. Complimentary guys. Jasinski's quick as any in the country. Jackson Reed, great stick. Matt Borges, a lot of experience inside on the defense. He can kind of run the show. Ryan Tarasenko, one of the best short stick defensive midfielders in the country. Justin Inacio, excellent Fogo. And a coach who he and his staff put guys in the right spot. So this team is like fully funded. They're playing complimentary defense, offense, the clear thing. They're doing a great job. Just not sure how good they are. We'll find that out now as they'll play Denver this week and their schedule gets much tougher from here on out. How high can you rank them? I don't know. I'm guessing they're going to receive a first place vote or two, and a lot of people are going to have them in two or three. I put them at five for now. I was looking at them anywhere from five, six, seven, or eight in that range.
You mentioned the coaching staff. They got a shout out on Bill Simmons' podcast on Friday. I haven't heard it yet. It was brought to my attention, and I assume because his guest was Mark Titus, a former Ohio State basketball player, that was the source of that shout out. But, you know, for Nick Myers and that group to get in front of, you know, millions of ears, it's pretty impressive. Moving along, let's talk about the Patriot League real quick. The expectation coming into the season was that Lehigh was probably going to be definitively the second best team. You know, Army, Navy, maybe Bucknell, depending on how they rebounded to a lot of graduation losses, were going to be in the mix for third. And then Lehigh struggled heavily at the beginning of the season, and Army came out of the gate strong, which is why the Mountain Hawks beating the Black Knights 11-8 was a result that caught my attention.
Well, it's all about face-offs because our Army is not good in that department at all. And Lehigh is a strong Fogo team. And that's an edge this year in a pretty stockpiled Patriot League other than Loyola that may give Lehigh the edge. And I think now they have some momentum. I like Colgate in that league as well. I think Navy has talent defensively. I'm just not sure who they are and what they're trying to do. Their strategy against Michael Sarris of Princeton was
not
really
good.
Bad. And so I got Colgate and Lehigh nipping at the heels, but that's a tough league. You know, even I think Holy Cross is going to get somebody when someone goes up to Worcester. So it's going to be really interesting watch to see how the Patriot League develops.
It's actually pronounced Worcester. Not
Worcester.
Many people know that. Maryland, 14, Albany, 9. Tohoku Nanacoke did not play. This after a really bad, really ugly 14-8 loss that the Great Danes suffered against UMass on Tuesday when Nanacoke did play after having been held out versus Cornell the Saturday prior due to a potential NCAA infraction. Coach Scott Marr said some things that he later and the university later apologized for. So not a pretty picture going on in the Capital Region. That said, Marr said post-game that he was impressed and pleased with both the effort and the energy and the tempo that they played against the Terps with, and it feels like one of those situations where if Albany had inverted their effort and their output versus their two teams that they've played that weren't quite as good versus the two that they played that were as good, their record would be a little bit better and they, you know, might be in a position that they aren't currently in. The one that they're currently in is now, at this point, you're just setting your sights on the America East tournament and winning that automatic bid to the NCAA tournament.
AQ or bust, and that's within their capabilities. I think team chemistry, team identity, is Tohoku Nanacoke going to be a part of this, or is he not going to be a part of this? Are they a better team without him? What's going on behind the scenes in the locker room? We don't know. So that's a soap opera that's going to play itself out. In terms of Maryland, It was a good win coming off that loss, that tough loss in the Thunderdome out at Notre Dame. Jared Bernhardt, I thought, flashed moments of brilliance in that Notre Dame game, and he took this game over. 8 points. Kyle Long's a spark off the bench. But again, Maryland, you look at the stats of that game and all their shots and goals and production. It's first attack, first midfield. There's really nothing else. Kyle was the only bench points, and he had two.
Moving along, Virginia 14, Brown 13. This was on Sunday. In overtime, you can slice this one of two ways. The Cavaliers survived against a Bears team that's not that good, or for the second week in a row, they won in overtime, and this is a young Cavaliers squad learning how to win. Which path do you want to walk down?
Every year, there is a team that defies the logic and the statistics by winning like every one goal game. This is Virginia's year, you know, and the easy thing is to call them the cardiac Cavs. That's three straight overtime wins, okay, three straight. Princeton was an overtime win at Syracuse and now at home against Brown. They have played with a certain passion and relentless attitude and grit when backed into a corner. As Coach Tiffany said, he'd like to see that in the first quarter. The biggest positive that – two positives that emerged from this game – Michael Krause is clearly 100%, and he's back to his old self. Okay, that wasn't the case in the first 3 weeks of the season. He's put together back-to-back stellar games. Goalie Alex Rode made 19 stops. Okay, this is the unusual. Alex was benched prior to that Syracuse game. He played the second half. He played okay. And now to see him go forward, that could be a giant difference maker for Virginia. They host Notre Dame this week, and one of more than a handful of great games this weekend.
So before we get to this weekend, we have 11 Tuesday games. It's definitely one to watch. We have two on television. You mentioned Mount St. Mary's versus Johns Hopkins. Also, keep an eye out for Rutgers on the Big Ten Network as they take on Lehigh. But one game that I want to bring everybody's attention to, Utah heads to Duke 7 p.m. The Utes are 4-3, and yet look, they're coming off of a nip and tuck win over Bellarmine. And when you look at the schedule, 4-3 at the beginning of the season isn't something that I would say, quote unquote, uninformed fans wouldn't think. They're like, oh, we're Utah, we can win these teams. We're a big Power Five conference, whatever. But like, this is not what startup programs do. It is pretty rare. It is definitely, there's been two or three programs that have come in and have amassed wins. This is the hardest week of Utah's season. This is a matchup against what may be the best team in the country. You know, I'm not expecting any, if it's any closer than 10-1 at the end of the, at halftime, I think that that is an impressive showing for the Utes.
If the Utes don't win another game this year, I'm still impressed with this initial campaign.
Yep.
You ranked them 73rd in the country.
Well, all right. Come on. No,
you did.
That's because St. Bonaventure was 72 and Utah was 73, and that's because they were alphabetical order, first-year programs, not applicable for prior year data. It's been what we've done with first-year programs for a really long time.
So they got Duke, Fairfield, UMass, Virginia all on the road, and then they have some games that could go maybe either way. Mount St. Mary's, Hartford, Cleveland State, and they finish up with Detroit Mercy. But this has been a terrific campaign. You know, Coach Brian Holman and his staff, Adam Gittleman, Marcus Holman, Will Manny, they've done wonderful work, really exceeding all expectations. And the Stout kid is legit. And he's a sophomore. How the heck did he end up there playing in the MCLA in 2018?
It's crazy. But, Quint, you mentioned it's been another great weekend in college lacrosse. If you like what you heard, tell a friend, leave a rating, leave a review. If you like what you heard, you almost certainly are going to like Quint's poll. It is available on InsideLacrosse.com right now. We're going to have more content coming at you all throughout the week, so make sure to hit that up, InsideLacrosse.com. Continue to set records in terms of our viewership and traffic, and follow him on Twitter, at Q Kesnick. I am at Terrence Foy, and we will be back next week.
Spring break, baby, spring break. Crazy things happen on spring break.
Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check. Testing 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.